Translation: Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, all together these eight constitute my separated material energies. Please repeat. Earth, water, fire, air, ether.
Earth, water, fire, ether.
Mind, intelligence, and false ego. All together these eight constitute. My separated material energies.
My separate material energies.
Okay, so if you can give me a second to mute. Everybody please mute at this time. Okay, we're ready.
Purpose. The science of God analyzes the constitutional position of God and his diverse energies. Material nature is called Prakriti, or the energy of the Lord, in his different Purusha incarnations, expansions, as described in the Satvata Tantra. Vishnu Stu Trini Rupani Purukshakyani Ato Vida Ekam Tu Mahata Shastri Dvitiyam Tu Anda Samastitam Tritiyam Sarva Bhutastam Tani Yadva Vimuchyate. For material creation, Lord Krishna's plenary expansion assumes three Vishnus. The first one, Mahavishnu, creates the total material energy known as the Mahatattva. The second, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, enters into all the universes to create diversities in each of them. The third, Tirunadakshayi Vishnu, is diffused as the all-pervading super soul in all the universes and is known as Paramatma. He is present even within the atoms. Anyone who knows these three Vishnus can be liberated from material entanglement. The material world is a temporary manifestation of one of the energies of the Lord. All the energies of the material world, all the activities of the material world are directed by these three Vishnu expansions of Lord Krishna. These Purushas are called incarnations. Generally, one who does not know the science of God assumes that the material world is for the enjoyment of the living entities, and that the living entities are the Purushas, the causes, controllers, and enjoyers of the material energy. According to Bhagavad Gita, this atheistic conclusion is false. In the verse under discussion, it is stated that Krishna is the original cause of the material manifestation. Srimad Bhagavatam also confirms this. The ingredients of the material manifestation are separated energies of the Lord. Even the Brahma Jyoti, which is the ultimate goal of the impersonalists, is a spiritual energy manifested in the spiritual sky. There are no spiritual diversities in the Brahma Jyoti as there are in the Vaikuntha Lokas, and the impersonalist accepts this Brahma Jyoti as the ultimate eternal goal. The Paramatma manifestation is also a temporary, all-pervasive aspect of the Tirodakshayi Vishnu. The Paramatma manifestation is not eternal in the spiritual world. Therefore, the factual absolute truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. He is the complete energetic person, and he possesses different separated and internal energies. In the material energy, the principal manifestations are eight, as above mentioned. Out of these, the first five manifestations, namely earth, water, fire, air, and sky, are called the five gigantic creations or the gross creations, within which the five sense objects are included. They are the manifestations of physical sound, touch, form, taste, and smell. Material science comprises these 10 items and nothing else, and nothing more. But the other three items, namely mind, intelligence, and false ego, are neglected by the materialists. Philosophers who deal with mental activities are also not perfect in knowledge because they do not know the ultimate source, Krishna. The false ego, I am and it is mine, which constitutes the basic principle of material existence, includes 10 sense organs for material activities. Intelligence refers to the total material creation called the Mahatattva. Therefore, from the 8 separated energies of the Lord are manifest the 24 elements of the material world, which are the subject matter of Sankhya atheistic philosophy. They are originally offshoots from Krishna's energies and are separated from him. But atheistic Sankhya philosophy, with a poor fund of knowledge, do not know Krishna as the cause of all causes. The subject matter for discussion in the Sankhya philosophy is only the manifestation of the external energy of Krishna, as it is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Om Jayanti Mirandasya Gyanan Jana Shalakaya Chakshus Umilitam Yena Tashmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swaya Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubaya Evacha Patitanam Patanebhyo Vaishnabhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Bhumi aponalo vayo kam mano bodhi evacha ahankara ityame bina prakriti astada earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Altogether, these 8 constitute my separated material energies. So, we can see that somehow or other, the presentation of Bhagavad Gita has sort of changed in this chapter. It's quite noticeable that in the previous chapters, you know, right from the beginning, Krishna was describing things separated from himself, like the soul. You know, he was describing the soul to Arjuna. And he was also describing throughout the first 6 chapters the activities of the soul, basically karma. You know, how the soul is in this material world and its activities. So in this chapter, and in particular in this verse, Krishna sort of begins to turn the spotlight on himself. He begins to describe himself, starting with his energies and his material energy in this particular verse. So Krishna has got many, many energies, as we know in the purport. And the Vedic scriptures generally divide Krishna's energies into 3 main energies. The Antaranga Shakti, that is the internal energy. The Tathasta Shakti, which is the marginal energy or the living entities, are the Tathasta Shakti. And the Bahiranga Shakti, which is the external energy, or also the material manifestation, as we can see it, is the external energy. So the internal energy is personified by Srimati Radharani, right? And the purpose of the internal energy is to give pleasure to Krishna, is to serve Krishna. And that is the constitutional position of the living entities, you know, actually engaged or actually situated in the internal energy and giving service to Krishna. And the external energy actually is what most of the living entities come under. The conditioned souls are under the influence of the external energy. And they try to enjoy the external energy. And the purpose of the external energy actually is to ultimately to frustrate the living entity, you know, to make him actually come to an understanding that he cannot really enjoy this energy, because when he tries to enjoy the energy, he encounters the, first of all, he's under the influence of the three modes of material energy, and these three modes are producing the three miseries as well, the kleshas, you know, adiatmic, adibhautik, and adideva, klesha. These are all coming from the external energy. So, Sri Prabhupada begins the purport by describing the three Vishnus, which is actually, he's describing here how the origin of the material energy or the material manifestation. And he describes that Krishna takes special incarnations of these Vishnus to create this external energy. First of all, the Mahavishnu creates the total material energy, known as the Mahatattva. Then the Gabodakasha Vishnu enters into all the universes to create diversities. And then Kirodakasha Vishnu goes into each of the universes, into each of the atoms, and is situated in each of them as the Paramatma. So this is all described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada gave an analogy, right, of how the oceans come about, these big bodies of water. He actually asked his disciple how the disciple would explain the existence of the big bodies of water, or the oceans. And Srila Prabhupada explained to the disciple that just like when we perspire, right, tiny beads of sweat come from our bodies, the pores of our body. So these big oceans, they come from the gigantic body, just the same as the body of Vishnu, right? Just the same as the sweat beads come from our body, these big oceans come from the gigantic body of Vishnu, and that is how they are manifest. So the material energy, Sri Prabhupada tells us that the material energy has got a purpose, right? It's got a purpose and a controller. It's got a purpose and a controller, and it's also got a cause. And the purpose is explaining to us that the cause of the material energy is actually Krishna. It is his energy. And we know that just like a candle has got, is situated in one place, and it diffuses its energy through its heat and light. It's situated in one place, but its heat and light are emanating from it, right? So the heat and light actually have a source, which is the candle, or the sunshine also. The sunshine is situated in one place, and its energy, comprising heat and light, are pervading the whole universe. So sometimes we may not see the sun, but we can see light and we can feel some warmth, right? But we may not actually see the sun. So if we conclude that the heat and light have no source or are self-existing, then we'll be making a mistake, because we know that they actually have their source in the sun, whether we can see the sun or not. So this is the same as Krishna's energies, right? Krishna's energies are here in this material world. They are coming from him, but we may not see him, but that doesn't mean that the energies don't have an energetic or a source from which they are coming. And Sri Prabhupada addresses this particular thing in the purport. He's saying that generally, one who does not know the signs of God, Krishna, assumes this material world is for the enjoyment of the living entities, and that the living entities are the Purushas, the causes, controllers, and the enjoyers of the material energy. According to Bhagavad Gita, this atheistic conclusion is false. So these people who don't actually understand that Krishna is the source of energy, right? Because they are wrongly thinking that the energies have no source, they think that they are actually the enjoyers of that energy. That energy has no source, so therefore it can be enjoyed in any way that they like. And they don't actually understand that it's got a controller, and it's got an enjoyer as well. As the person who who is producing the energy is the person who is entitled to enjoy the energy. Just like myself, I mean, I go to work. When I go to work, I get a paycheck, right? Now, this paycheck is the equivalent, or it can be seen as the equivalent of the energy I have expended in my efforts. So I am given that in the form of some monetary reward or compensation for the energy that I have used. Now, that paycheck, I would expect it to be used for myself, either directly or indirectly. But if I've worked for that money, I expect that money to be used for me. So this energy of Krishna, it actually belongs to Krishna. He is the energy is the Shakti, and Krishna is the Shakti man. And the Shakti is meant to be used for the pleasure of the Shakti man, or the person who is possessing the energy. So this idea, or this misunderstanding of Krishna's energies, right? The conditioned souls who misunderstand that these energies are Krishna's energies end up doing all sorts of wrong things with this energy, right? And Krishna actually specifically addresses this issue in the 16th chapter, where he calls this kind of understanding or misunderstanding of his energies and this false enjoyment of his energies he describes it as a demoniac propensity. So there are a couple of verses in the 16th chapter which describe actually the consequences of misusing this energy or not understanding this energy and who it belongs to. So I'll just read some of them, starting with 16:8, right? I'll just read the English. It says that, so this is those people who don't understand the energies, right, and try to exploit it. It says that they say, this world is unreal with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust, right? So they say the world has no cause other than lust. Following such conclusions, the demoniac, who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false ego, the demoniac thus illusioned are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable. Bound by a network of hundreds and thousands of desires and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future, more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices, I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. So, this is the demoniac mentality. The demon thinks that the material energy is meant for his enjoyment and his exploitation, and therefore he becomes very, very, very greedy and just exploits it and thinks of nothing else but himself and his enjoyment. So they don't understand that the energy has got a rightful owner. Right? That is what the problem of the demoniac person is. It does not actually understand that the energy belongs to somebody. And this is the very point that Krishna is making in this verse. This is the very point that Krishna is explaining in this verse, that energy is his energy. It's actually very important because he's saying that it is my energy, and the consequence of not knowing is very serious, as we can see. So in the purport also, Srila Prabhupada says that the material energy, the principal manifestations are eight, as above mentioned, right? So they are eight: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. These are the eight manifestations. So these are further divided by Sankhya philosophy, right? These are further divided into 24, as Srila Prabhupada also explains. So first there are the five, called the Mahabhuta, the Pancha Mahabhuta, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Then mind, intelligence, and false ego. Then there are more subtle aspects, right, which are also called the tanmatras, which is with the earthy smell. With the earthy smell, right? The subtle form of the earth is smell, and for water is taste. Earth, water, fire is form. For the air is touch, and for the ether is sound. Right. So these are 10, and the gross and the subtle aspects, and there's the knowledge acquiring senses, the ganendriyas. Then there's the karmendriyas, the five working senses. So the knowledge acquiring senses are the eyes, the nose, the mouth, the ears, and the skin. Right? These are knowledge acquiring senses. Then there's the working senses, the voice, the working senses. I thought I knew this, but I'm sorry. The working senses are the legs and the voice and the belly and the genitals and the rectum, something like that. Yeah, I think I'm right. And then we have the pradhan, which is the unmanifested, and three modes of material nature. So these are 24, right? These are 24 altogether if you count them, and they are, of course, they are explained in the 13th chapter as well. So of these 24 things, the scientists actually, Sri Prabhupada says that the material scientists, the only, says material science comprises these 10 items, which is the first one, right? Earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and then the subtle equivalents, right? And tastes and smell and all that sort of thing. So he says that material science comprises these 10 items and nothing more than these 10. So this is how material science is. Material science actually, they consider anything that is in existence has to be somehow or other quantifiable. You know, this is how material science works. It has to be quantifiable, or it has to be somehow or other measurable. You know, and what they cannot measure, what they cannot quantify, they consider to be some abstraction or something that doesn't exist as far as they're concerned. Right? They are dealing purely with what they can perceive with the senses, and these things have to be, like I said, they have to be able to quantify them. Otherwise, they don't accept them. So we know that they're able to quantify the things that are mentioned there, or these 10 things material science can deal with, because they actually have to have some criteria, so they have to have some weight or volume or something, some way they can measure. Then they accept its existence, or they can study it. So on the basis of these 10 things, actually, material science somehow or other, you know, has still understood something which is extremely important. And material science has actually understood through Einstein, you know, Einstein's famous theory, E is equal to mc squared. I don't have a scientific background, but this is a general sort of thing out there. So E is equal to mc squared, right? Einstein said that energy is equivalent to mass or matter. Mass means weight, right? Mass times the speed of light squared. Energy is E, mass is M. So E is equal to mc squared. And c squared is the constant, the speed of light squared. So Einstein, right, established a very wonderful principle that energy actually is matter. Matter is condensed energy, right? With this formula, E is equal to mc squared, he's saying that energy is matter which is condensed. So this is a very great finding in material science, about the most important or the most famous equation, and for which Einstein won a Nobel Prize, right? So this E is equal to mc squared, actually, it's exactly what Krishna is saying without actually giving the formula like that. He's actually saying that earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, all together, these 8 constitute my separated material energies. So Krishna is saying that these things, these manifestations, They're actually energy. He's saying the same thing, actually, that Einstein is saying. Einstein is saying the same thing that Krishna is saying. It's quite extraordinary, actually, when you think of it. And Krishna said this 5,000 years ago and before, as we know, right? So science, I mean, there's a big debate out there. There's always been for centuries between science and religion, whether they are opposed to each other or whether they complement each other or whether they are singing from the same hymn book or they're saying the same things, right? And what is becoming clearer and clearer is that especially the Vedic scriptures are being corroborated by science all the time. Right, Srila Prabhupada says that in Sri Upanishad, you know, he says that these Vedic statements, you know, they are axiomatic truths. You know, they come from a perfect source, and he says that the scientists can do research into all these truths, and they'll find that these are truths. You know, the scientists can do research, and they'll find that all these Vedic statements are truths, but to save them time, it takes so much time and so much energy to do all the research. It's just to accept these statements, right, as truth, which is what they are. And this is a case in point where Krishna is saying that, you know, his energy is the material. Krishna is saying that matter is energy, right? And it's exactly the same thing that is being said here by science. So Krishna, so somehow or other we accept that energy is matter now, or matter is energy, right? And that statement, like I said, was made by Krishna. But one thing so science has accepted that. So the next part of the statement Krishna makes is that he's saying that this is my energy, right? This is my energy. And that part, science is not accepting, right? They've accepted one part where Krishna is saying that this matter is energy, but as things stand at the moment, they are reluctant to accept the second part of the statement, where Krishna is saying that it is my energy. So we know in the same way as the first part is true, the second part is true. We know that, right? We know that because Krishna has actually said that this matter is energy, and he's saying that it is my energy. And we accept the second part as well of Krishna's statements, because we know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is the possessor of all the energies, right? So he's also saying that mind, intelligence, and all that, or mind, intelligence, and false ego are also energy. They're also material energy. Now, Sri Prabhupada mentions in the purport that it is science, the materialists don't actually acknowledge this, right? He says that philosophers but the other three items, namely mind, intelligence, and false ego, are neglected by the materialists. Right, they are neglected by the materialists. Mind, intelligence, and false ego are neglected by the materialists because they cannot actually measure. But we know these things exist, right? But of course, now there are other branches of science that are looking into these things, right? But generally, the gross materialists who believe that this world has no cause and no controller, they are the ones who don't accept it. And such philosophers who deal with mental activities are also not perfect in knowledge because they do not know the ultimate source, Krishna, right? So if you don't know the source, Krishna, then you're not in perfect knowledge. Yes. So mind, intelligence, and ego are also energy, right? Mind is energy. Thoughts are energy. Krishna is saying that this is energy as well. And it's also his energy. It's material energy. It's not, mind is not spiritual. No, it's intelligence, spiritual. Even though we can't see it, it is material energy, and that means it can be measured. It is quantifiable. And we all know that thoughts are very powerful things. You know, thoughts are energy, right? Thoughts are energy. The whole material world, the whole material manifestation is energy. It's energy. It's vibrating with energy at different rates of vibration. The different energies, all over, all mixed up, right? It's just made of energy, right? From the gross to the subtle. And mind is also energy, and it's part of this whole cosmic energy that is going on around us. And we know that thoughts, right? We've all experienced thoughts, how thoughts can have effects on people. If you're thinking, sometimes if you're thinking very, very negatively about somebody, you can feel the effect it might be having on them. Somehow you can perceive it, that this is having a negative effect. Just the thoughts that you're having are having a negative effect. Or if you're feeling very positive about things and people, you can feel that energy. If you're in a room, you can actually feel something about the energy of the room. You don't have to be particularly sensitive to feel these things. You can enter into places and you can feel some prevailing energy in a place, you know, or somebody walks into a place and somehow or other they seem to be carrying some kind of energy, you know, the way they are thinking and all that somehow manifests from themselves, right? So it actually, mind and thought are energy. And this is what Krishna is telling us. And we should know that because mind is energy, energy has got some characteristics, right? It can be transmuted. It can be changed, right? Like you have hydroelectric energy, right? The dams are blocked up, right? And because of the dam being blocked up, right, the energy that is coming from the water by the force of gravity is actually being, they're actually able to get some electricity from it or something. So the energy from the water, right, is, in science there's something called potential energy and kinetic energy. So potential energy is the energy that is inherent in something, that is there, in like dormant in that thing, is waiting to be tapped. And the kinetic energy is energy that is getting from its movement, right? So when a dam is made, because of the height of the water, right, the water has got some potential energy. And that, when the dam is released, that potential energy comes in the form, or it can be tapped into, we can tap into that energy to get electric and all that. So the energy can be changed, right? The energy can be changed. Energy can be balanced, right? You can have negative energy and you can have positive energy. Even in electricity, anything negative and positive, if you put them together, you can balance it. So mind is also like that. Thoughts are like that. They are energy and they are quantifiable, right? They're measurable. So you can have negative energy. Say I have 10 units of very negative energy, right? Very negative energy, like say hate, because these are energies. Emotions also are energies. They're another subtle transformation of thoughts, of the thought energy becomes emotions, right? So I can have, say, 10 units of hate or something, negative energy, very negative. And these types of energies are vibrating in very low vibrations, right? Hate. And love is vibrating at a very high level. So if I have 10 units of energy, I can neutralize that to neutralize that negative energy, I need 10 units of positive energy, right? Like love, 10 units of positive energy, right? And to actually get into a position of positive love, I need more than 10 units of love. So energy, thoughts and emotions can actually be measured like that, right? So we have to understand these things about energy, right? We have to understand these things about energy, that the energies that we carry, you know, they're actually having an effect because they're material, you know. We've heard of extrasensory projection, ESP. We've heard of there's remote healing and things like that. Like Jesus Christ, right? Somebody approached him to heal his daughter. So the person had got great faith in Jesus Christ, and he says that you can heal my daughter, even though Jesus Christ was not where the daughter was. But somehow or other, Jesus Christ says, oh, because of your faith is so wonderful. Yes, you go home. Your daughter is fine. So Jesus Christ healed that person by not being present, but he had to project some energy. Right, so the energy is there through the mind. The energy can be protected. It can be projected. And we know this of the yogis as well. The yogis have got such powerful energy and mental energy. Right, they're able to do so many things, you know, just with their minds. So it's an energy. So this chapter 7 actually is chapter 7 is entitled Jnana Vijnana Yoga. That is the Sanskrit for this 7th chapter. And we've heard so many times of Jnana, Jnana and Vijnana, and we know there's a difference between Jnana and Vijnana. So sometimes we say that Vijnana is like scientific knowledge. Sometimes it's translated as like scientific knowledge. Or sometimes Vijnana is also called realized knowledge, like that. And that's what it is, right? So Vijnana is realized knowledge, right? So Gyan is like just knowledge, right? It's knowledge of something, right? So for instance, now outside now, it's raining now here. Where I am, it's raining, right? So that, there's water coming, right? Water is Krishna's energy, isn't it? It says earth water. So that is Krishna's energy. So it's raining now. So if I just see, oh, it's raining, I don't see anything else. I just see the water. It's raining. My windows are wet. So I know it's raining. Now, if that is all I can see, then that is gyan, right? It's knowledge. It is raining. Yes, it's a fact, you know? And it's real knowledge also, because it's there. It's factual. It's raining. I can see it. But, and it's the same with all the other elements. Anything that I'm seeing earth outside there, garden, everything. So all that is material elements. I can see them. So if that's all I can see, that is gyan. But if I understand that the rain is Krishna, if I can, if somehow or other, when I see the rain, I understand this is Krishna, or I make a connection with Krishna, it generates that sort of emotion in me, then that is vigyan. That is the difference between gyan and vigyan. Just seeing the rain is gyan, and understanding that the rain is Krishna, or seeing that the rain is Krishna, is vigyan. So this is how Krishna is telling us about all these things. In the 7th chapter in particular, he mentions all these energies of his in this material creation so that we can actually understand him. By seeing these things, we connect, we make that connection with him, and we should actually have that understanding that everything that we are seeing is Krishna. In fact, the middle chapters, not only in the 7th verse, in the whole of the middle chapters, this is what we are seeing. So it's not just having knowledge of his energies, but actually realizing that those energies belong to him, right? And through those energies, we should be seeing him. Like he says in the Bhagavad Gita, that for one who sees me everywhere, I'm never lost to him, to that person, right? And that person is never lost to me. So this is the purpose of Krishna actually describing his energies here. So seeing the rain alone is gyan, and actually understanding that somehow if that connection is made in me, if it generates the emotion that this is Krishna, that is gyan. Just like we heard on Friday, right? We heard on Friday, when we're doing the reading from Chaitanya, from the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, we heard how Gaurakishore Babaji, how we heard how children were throwing. He was a very realized personality, and we heard how children were throwing stones at him because they thought he was a mad person, right? He was a mad person because of his appearance, and the children used to throw stones at him. And Gaurakishore Das Babaji, one time he was being stoned by the children, and he said, "Hey Krishna," he says, "Hey Krishna, if you don't stop what you're doing, I'm going to tell Mother Yashoda." Right? That's what he said. He says, "Hey Krishna, if you don't stop what you're doing, I'm going to tell Mother Yashoda, and she will chastise you." So he was, stones were being thrown at him, but he didn't see stones. He didn't see the children. He didn't see children throwing stones. He could only see Krishna in all of that. So this shows that he was realized. That is his realization, right? Through the material energy, he's seeing Krishna. And this is the whole purpose of Krishna describing his energies to us in the middle 6 chapters. So thank you very much for listening. I'll leave it there if there are any contributions or anything else. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Yeah, Prabhu, I'm sorry.
Conference is being recorded.
Phew, I'm sorry. I had a bunch of things going on in the screen here.
That's all right. No
problem. I was a little confused. I'm not sure if you can answer my question or not, but I got lost when you were talking about Einstein's theory about energy. You may see that written on people's T-shirts, you know. Everybody
knows
that. It's a nice little slogan. I don't know what it means, but I did understand when I was in grade school when you had to take this kind of stuff energy slows down, then it becomes matter. That's a theory. But how is that a parallel with Sankhya? That I couldn't follow. This shows that modern science, you see, they figured it out, and it's in the Bhagavad Gita. That I couldn't follow, how it's...
The point I was making was that Einstein, the point I was making by using that equation is that Einstein is saying that energy is, or matter is condensed energy, right? He's saying that matter, like when they split the atom, or like nuclear fission, right? The atom is split, and a lot of energy comes from that splitting the atom, like the uranium atom. If it's split, you get lots of energy, right? So I was just making the point that energy is equivalent to matter, and energy is matter is condensed, is a condensed form of energy. And I was only saying that Krishna is already described matter as his energy. He's saying that this material manifestation is his energy. So I was just saying that it's the same thing that Krishna has already said. Einstein is saying in this formula, this the very same, only that he's actually been able to actually get a formula to explain that energy is matter. But that energy is matter, we already know that from Bhagavad Gita, that energy is matter. I don't know if that is what you're saying. I'm only saying that Krishna has already said that matter is energy. It's not a new thing to understand that matter is energy. Is this what you're saying? I mean, is this the am I answering the question or not really?
I suppose I don't know. I just don't know much about physics. I always understood that the description that is given in Sankhya philosophy and summarized by we get in this verse about the material elements, it's just like a map for understanding how to get out of the material world. We have things in physics like the periodic table and you know, all those things. You can make all kinds of calculations and actually it works. You can, you know, make nuclear bombs and fly jet airplanes, all that stuff by making certain kinds of calculations, shoot rockets off. So, you know, definitely this kind of stuff works, but you're not going to become self-realized by it. And whereas the description in Sankhya philosophy in this verse of the Bhagavad Gita, you may not be able to figure out mathematical calculations that you can use in physics, but that's not what its purpose is. Just like you have topographical maps, you have demographic maps, you have maps for that, you know, do all kinds of things. So this is specifically a map or a description. Sankhya means to enumerate so that we can get out of this material world, you know, understand its relationship to Krishna. I couldn't follow what you were saying, that, you know, that E equals MC squared, you know, that shows the same as...
The only reason why I quoted that formula, is just for one thing, is just to say that energy is matter. I was actually interested in the mechanics of it, right? But all I'm saying is that Einstein is saying exactly the same thing as Krishna has already said, that energy is matter. There is an equivalence between energy and matter. This is the only purpose of the formula. As far as this class I was trying to give was concerned, I was just saying that energy is matter, and nothing more than that. I'm saying that Krishna has already said that energy is matter. You see? He's already said that energy is matter, that matter, this matter is energy. This is what I mean. This is what, for me, when I read that verse, you know, about saying that matter is energy, I find it very fascinating from that point of view, because Krishna has already established that energy is matter. And Einstein won a Nobel Prize for that very, very fact. Because that was the point, that was what he won the Nobel Prize for establishing that energy is matter.
Uh-huh.
And I find it quite amazing. So, I'm not actually interested in how it works or anything. I'm just saying that energy is matter, you know, and Einstein and science is agreeing with that. Science has corroborated that statement, that energy is matter. And also I said that if energy is matter and we are accepting that, then Krishna is saying that this energy is coming from him. And so I'm questioning why is it that science has accepted one part of the statement and not the other part, to understand that that energy is, the source of that energy is Krishna as well.
Mm. Nice.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for pulling us up on that one, and you know, I hope it's clearer. I don't have a scientific background myself, but that formula is quite simple, isn't it? Energy is matter. It's mass times speed of light squared. You know, that's the beauty of the formula. It's very simple. And everyone can understand it, or anyone can see it. everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. There's still about a dozen devotees on. Anyone else have any questions or comments?
Thanks for a very nice class, Prabhu.
You're very kind and generous to you, Prabhu. Thank you for listening.
We had a wonderful festival today here at the temple with Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, and the prasadam was out of this world.
Wow.
Wonderful.
I'm still suffering. I'm still suffering the effects.
the purifying effects.
Yeah. Yeah,
there
was a real nice group of devotees, and it was just great. You know, it's so nice to be part of this Prabhupada's family. It's such a gift to us, you know.
Mm.
How many devotees? Is the temple room full? Whatever, 50, 60?
Very good.
Yeah, I was at the manor yesterday, which was Janmashtami yesterday, actually, and it was very, very nice. It was really packed. And, you know, the devotees, you know, it's amazing just how much they put into it. So many very attractive things to attract people. The whole mood was, you could feel the whole mood was a preaching mood to get, you know, to attract people, because people have been coming to the temple for years and years. And actually, the devotees are trying to do more to get people to actually participate in the temples and not just come to take darshan. Like many Hindus, they tend to do that, isn't it? They come in and take darshan, give some donation, take a little prasad and go. But the spirit there was trying to get people, to explain to people that there's a lot more they can do in the temples and to participate. And that was the mood. And actually, Radhanath Maharaj was there. I listened to him very briefly. And he was talking about some Krishna's pastimes. But one that stuck with me was Mother Yashoda trying to bind Krishna like that, you know, and he was very enthusiastically explaining the pastime. And he said that, you know, as we know, every time they tried, the gopis supplied ropes and all that, every time they tried, it was shot by two lengths. And he said that those two things, that those two lengths that the rope was shot by represent, you know, our endeavor in Krishna consciousness, our endeavor to come to Krishna, the endeavor that we put in. And the other thing represents Krishna's mercy. So we have to endeavor, and we need Krishna's mercy to actually be able to bind Krishna, you know, with our love. And he explained it very nicely, actually.
Wow, that's
so, yeah, that was very nice.
I had heard
it was very nice mood.
I heard that 60,000 people came over the weekend.
Yes, I was there only for yesterday. That is the typical sort of number. That is the sort of attendance that they have for that festival. So it's very successful, very, very amazing. And they really put in a lot, you know. It's a lot goes on. I mean, they set up so many things. It's just you always wish that you could bring so many people there. When you go to a place like that, you wish that you had the power to bring, you know, friends and all that with you. Because you know somebody will get something from it. It's a very wonderful festival. And the Bhaktivedanta Manor, they always do that because they've got the grounds, you know, they've got those huge grounds, so they're actually able to host that big festival. And Soho Temple, they do the Radha Yatra, you know. So those two temples, between them, they do the Radha Yatra and then they do the Janmashtami festivals. And both of them very, very successful. Yeah, very nice.
I just said it's the largest Hindu festival outside of India at the
absolutely
manor.
Absolutely. And you just have to see just the management of parking and everything. It's so, you know, we have police people come there to help us, you know, with the festival, because right from the, before you get to the temple, from the streets before you get to the temple, because the traffic is very heavy, you know, because the temple is in the outskirts of town, it's quite fast. So basically everybody is coming there by car. So you can imagine, I mean, to manage all those cars, you know, and they do a great service there, a very fantastic job. So it's very big. You have to be there to actually see how big it is. And the atmosphere is always very light. And actually, I heard that it never rains on Janmashtami, you know, and so far, the ones that I've seen, it hasn't rained. you know, it's quite amazing. Like I said to you, it's raining here now where I am this morning. And it has been raining in different parts of the UK. But it never rains on Janmashtami. And I think yesterday was a very, very glorious day, actually, in terms of the weather. It was really nice. So it was a fantastic success. And I'm sure it was a great devotional success as well, because, you know, they were just giving out so much literature and so many. I went to a presentation, which was the Bhagavad Gita, in 5 minutes. You know, and it was really nice. I mean, just 5 minutes to understand the whole of Bhagavad Gita. And that was very good. For anybody who had no idea what Bhagavad Gita was about, if somebody listened to a presentation like that, only 5 minutes, they would go away with a lot, you know. So it was very nice. It was, I mean, in that 5 minutes, you actually heard about Krishna telling us about the soul and then karma, you know, and this material world, like that, those things, and about himself, and then time. So those five things were just like expanded upon in 5 minutes, and it was very wonderful.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and yeah, very, very good.
You're saying that was like a booth that was there?
Yes, it was in an open place. It was like a tent, you know, a tent with an open part. But I went, and I mean, it was, for the time I was there, there were about 40 people around me, you know. So that was just one presentation, 5 minute presentation. So they're trying to do things like that. They're trying to make it, they're trying to get people actually involved, listening more to the philosophy. You know, before the festival, right, it was like very, very, very elaborate in terms of all the different, and they'd do models of Krishna's pastimes. And I don't know if I can explain it, but they'd do, you know, they make sculptures and all that, you know, of different things that Krishna is doing. A lot of the emphasis was on all those types of things. But this year, there weren't too many of things like that, you know. There weren't too many of, like, robotic things and things like that. You know, it was just so much more preaching effort from, I mean, the plays and all that they did. I also watched a very nice play about how a devotee, how somebody was very interested in Krishna consciousness, and his parents, you know, his Hindu parents, were very disturbed by his interest in Krishna consciousness and all that, and very concerned about him beginning to take interest in the temple. And the parents were saying to him, no, the temple is, I go to the temple as well, but I only go there for Janmashtami and for weddings. I don't go there for anything else. And we expect you to do the same, you know. We don't expect you to start going to the temple. So this was, you know, it was targeted at youngsters, you know, young people who are thinking that without Krishna consciousness, or if they get involved in Krishna consciousness, they cannot be successful in their careers and things like that. So at the end of that play, you know, they showed a clip of quite a lot of devotees who come to the Bhaktivedanta Manor, who are just big professionals out there, you know, like doctors and Morgan Stanley traders and people who work for accountancy firms and all the ends are young. So they were trying to show that, you know, Krishna consciousness is for not just for people who don't have things to do outside, but it's for career people as well, doctors and all that. So this is where this is the mood. They're trying to attract more professionals and things to just take it more seriously, to take Krishna consciousness more seriously. And I think in doing that, I think they were, you know, they were putting out a very powerful message, and I'm sure that the uptake will be very good, because it was presented very nicely, very modern presentation, you know, like all the sound effects and all that. Very nice.
Well,
yeah. You know, the devotees have got great, great skill in whatever they do. You know, they're experts in whatever they do, and they do things. It's just amazing how they always seem to do things very, very, very well, whatever they apply themselves to. You know, they really put in a lot of effort, and the results are always quite wonderful.
Thank you for the report.
thank you for bringing out the memory. So, yeah, Hare Krishna.
All right. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Srila Prabhupada. Gaurav Premanande. Haribo.
Haribo. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Hare Krishna.